I think we're going to have a little bit of fun. I think you're going to learn a few things. I'm going to tell you some stories. I'm going to tell you a bit of Montana State's history. Sometimes I'm going to read from like the exponent or the yearbook, and because their words are a lot better than mine, because I want it to be authentic of the time. And so I will oftentimes refer to my notes to do this. I do get to give this presentation around campus a lot. I give it to the new faculty who are starting at MSU, which is such a fun thing to be able to do. I give it to lots of students, lots of departments at their retreats, and there will be some fun ways to refer back to some of those folks as well. And you can see that I went to the basement and I pulled out a few things that I just thought that you would enjoy seeing. The Rennie Library also has things as well. You can imagine over time there's so much. And while I would love for this building to display it, we just don't have the space. So when I win the lottery, Kerry Hansen is going to build an alumni building that's going to be able to display this stuff. And there's some really great just great memorabilia. I know there's actually two Jim Sargent's sister. This one is her band letter sweater, right? Yeah. But some of the, there's two from 1929 that have the old Bobcat. So if you have a chance to look at them, it's great. There's just some great things. And we don't have a lot here. We have taken several things over to the library, but just thought you would enjoy seeing some things, and I'll try to reference them so that you can look at them afterwards as we go. So. The very first question that I already had was about what era is this picture right here. It's going to be early 1900s, and we'll talk about how, you know, there probably is a date somewhere, but Montana Hall wasn't built until 1896, so 3 years after we were started. We do love that there's this one cow right here, right? It's perfect. And we're gonna talk about Taylor Hall also, which is right here. So 11th Street would go like this, right? Up and down. This building right here was the original chemistry lab building, basically, and it burned down. So some of you may remember a story like that. That original building actually burned. But we're gonna talk about it. So onward, here we go. All right, so the picture on the left is obviously a very similar era. The picture on the right is probably today or yesterday. Not really. But how did we get here, basically? And again, some of this is gonna be information that you already know. We were established as the land grant institution in the state of Montana, which meant that land was going to be given to us in this state in order to start an institution that would be for educating the working people's sons and daughters of America, and especially of Montana. And so that's what land grant institutions were for. But before we became that land grant institution, there's a reason why we actually got the college here. And some of you also may know this, but Bozeman was in competition to become Montana's state capital. And we were in competition between, it was Bozeman, Anaconda, and Helena who were in that competition. And if you think about the streets in Bozeman, so 8th Street that comes up towards campus that has the boulevard in the middle of it, you know, the grass in the middle. So now 7th Avenue is like that, but it wasn't originally. That 8th Street is the only street in Bozeman that's like that. And the reason why it was like that is because that was going to be the entrance into the state capitol. That was Bozeman saying, we're going to make this grand. It's going to be amazing. This is going to be the entrance. So really, the capitol would have sat at about Wilson Hall, Jabs Hall-ish, right? So this grand entrance up the hill a little bit. So that's why that street is like that. Bozeman was actually kicked out of the running for the state capitol fairly quickly. And so then it came down to Anaconda and Helena. You obviously know what happened. But if you ever have a chance to read or even Google and look up some of the arguments between Anaconda and Helena as to who should be the state capitol, it is great reading. Because it's like the Anaconda people are saying, we're the working people of Montana. And the Helena people are saying, but we're the business people of Montana. And they kind of went back and forth against each other as to who should be the capital. Well, because they were still in competition for the capital, then Bozeman became in the running for one of two other federal institutions. So we were either going to be the home of the state college, the land-grant college, or the state prison, right? Woohoo! They chose pretty good, right? Thank you. And really, how that came about was businessmen in Bozeman, it was really their wives, it was women of Bozeman, who said, we would like a more dignified and educated population, and in order to do that, we would be best served to have a college in our town, a place of higher learning. And so that is, among other things, the community really rallied around getting a place of higher learning here in Bozeman. Our very first classes were held on Main Street in a skating rink. And then we got too big, we grew out of that. We co-opted with the high school at that time, traded off when classes would be, and then it got a little confusing at that time. You can imagine mostly men were taking classes, although women were too, but it was getting confusing between who is a high school student and who is a college student, because at that time you could really be either. And so our Montana State really started down on Main Street because the community said, we've got to get this going. We actually had a deadline that we had to start classes by June 30th in order to be to secure getting the land grant institution here, as well we had to have land dedicated to us. And so what this land was at that time was not great farmland, actually. It's 1,170 acres were donated to become the land grant institution's place, right? So indeed, we became the land grant institution, and the name when we first started was the Agriculture College of the State of Montana. Makes sense, right? We were, and that's part of the Morrill Act as well. So you did agriculture, you did mechanic arts, and if you were a female, because Montana State was open for all populations, men and women, all races, all creeds, because we were an institution for the working people's sons and daughters, right? For Montana. And so we became this place that was accessible for people if they wanted to come here. And so basically you were the farmer or the rancher. You fixed the farm or ranch machinery, which made you the engineer, kind of. Or you learned how to keep a household, which made you the female, right? So, because that's what females studied when they came here. So the Morrill Act did say that there needed to be certain fields of study available, and scientific laboratory was one of those areas of study. And so that's where, in this last picture, one of the next academic buildings, this was an administration building, Montana Hall, but aside from Taylor Hall, which was the first building on campus built, the chemistry building then was the next building, the lab. So there were classes held in both of those buildings for sure. So, and you all know Taylor, right? You'll see it if you drive down 11th. It has the white roof on it. Kind of looks like a barn a little bit. So that was the very first building on campus. They called this the School on the Hill. So, because if you think about it, we're a little bit uphill from Bozeman, right? So this was referred to as the School on the Hill. We did change names to the College of Agriculture and Mechanic Arts to better suit the Morrill Act, noting what we should be providing in terms of academics. So we did change, and we were that until 1921. And then 1921 to 1965, we were Montana State College. So, and I know some of you went to Montana State College. I know some retirees worked at Montana State College. And you can imagine at the Alumni Foundation, we have to be very sensitive to that. Because when people went to Montana State College here in Bozeman, there were people who attended the institution in Missoula, but it was called Montana State University, right? So, Tad? You were just saying, yeah, that's right. And so you can imagine when people show up and there's MSU on the centerpieces, right? They're like, we didn't go to MSU, we went to MSC. And it's really, so we just turn the U on the side, right? Make it a C. No, but that was the case. But Montana State, this land-grant institution was founded first. Maybe only by one day, but we were first. So February 16th, 1893 is our founding day, and theirs is February 17th. So how about that? We were first. As you know, we became Montana State University in 1965. There's a newspaper article from July 1st, 1965, when we changed from Montana State College to Montana State University. It talked about why that name is going to be so important to us. And it's because becoming a university then meant you were more respected as a research institution. You could establish programs so that more people could earn their terminal degrees, their PhDs. While we did have some of that as an opportunity, we got more of it when we became a university. It was very common as well for other land-grant institutions to have, you know, the name of the state and then state university, right? That was kind of the land-grant model, so to speak. So, yeah, that's basically how we began. And I think about, you know, not just the people of Bozeman then and the decision that our state and those people made to bring this institution to Bozeman, and not Deer Lodge. I mean, Deer Lodge is a nice place too, but man, what a great decisions that they made and the people behind it, right? It was Nelson Story who owned both the skating rink and the high school building, which we shared classes with. So he basically then donated those two buildings to the college in order for us to get started. So again, a tie to Bozeman. So we have a carillon today. So, and the bells would ring, it's like it feels like it's coming out of the cupola, and it kind of is. So the cupola is that steeple on top of Montana Hall. So this is the original. This one went back up in 1993 for MSU's centennial year, but Mike Malone was the president at that time. And for many of you, and me too, when I was in college, that the steeple wasn't on Montana Hall. So it's so funny, like we've totally used that, right, as an image of the university, which today doesn't seem strange, but for 75 years, that steeple, the cupola, was not up there. So they put it back up as a replication. And that's a perfect segue. So the bells, the carillon that you hear are up there, it sounds like they're up there, it comes from up there. And that plays on both the hour and the half hour, right? So the cupola came down. I'm sure some of you have heard of this tale. There was actually a lot of debauchery that would happen around the cupola, a lot of pranks, college pranks would happen. Toilet paper being thrown out the windows, students being locked up there, what have you. And the last straw was that a cow was taken up in the cupola. And that was the last straw. That was it. It was coming down. Now, when they put it back, and that was in the 1920s, and when they put it back up, when they put the cupola back up, they did put a little tiny plastic cow up there to commemorate that. And there's a fun story about the cupola too, and it might be a little hard to see, but on each corner, there are these little copper balls, basically. Montana State was trying to make it look as original as they could, but also be frugal as we are. So they really wanted to have that ornamental detail, and copper, very expensive at that time, couldn't find it, so it's a small detail, we'll just let it go. Well, what ended up happening was campus architect got a call from some folks at Longfellow Elementary School who were doing renovations in their bathrooms. And you all will know, but when I explain this to students, they're like, what? What that is the copper balls from the toilets, the copper floats from the toilets. Longfellow School. Right? We're very resourceful people. We always have been, right? Yeah. So the cupola, for so many years, it wasn't up there, right? Probably for most of your tenure, it wasn't. But now it's iconic for our university, right? So obviously, we've always been about academics. I already told you that agriculture and mechanic arts and science laboratory studies were part of the end domestic economy. That's what they called what women would study, for the most part, were the original founding academic programs at Montana State. And I also will share with you that we had our first graduating class, which was in 1896, had two men and two women, and they were all from Montana. So pretty amazing. This is another great slide that I love to show students to remind them and tell them that when we used to get phone calls, that you would have to go to the end of the hall to take that call, right? A little bit before when I was in college, but you would race to the phone booth, right? Like that's how it worked when you got a phone call. So that's in Hannon or Hattner, one of the two. So our school colors at Montana State are blue and gold. We know that, right? But how did it come to be and why? So there is a reason why we are blue and gold, and it makes perfect sense. The alma mater, which is the slow song that you only hear generally at commencement anymore, but it used to be a song that you would sing as a student. I know some of you did. So both the alma mater was written to reflect what Montana State represented. So you guys know, like Notre Dame, their alma mater at the end of their competitions, they sway with each other, however. Well, our alma mater, again, you mostly hear it at commencement, it goes to the tune of O Tannenbaum or O Christmas Tree. Slightly different. Dr. Ilse Marie Lee in Honors College, and also a musician, rewrote it a little bit so it wouldn't be exactly like Oh Christmas Tree, but basically it says, fling wide our colors, bright and true, sunlight gold and ether blue. So our school colors are blue and gold for the sun and the rich earth of Bozeman, and ether blue is like the sky, ethereal, like the heavens, the sky. So really, our official school color is more like a sky blue. So pretty awesome, huh? It makes sense. Probably, I mean, it may not be as blue sky today, but think about that blue sky that we have in Bozeman. Why are we the Bobcats and those that are golden? So also, you know, not just by chance did we become the Bobcats. There's a great story behind it. So you can imagine, and I'm sure lots of you know and remember this, but what were we known before we were the Bobcats? Any guesses? What kind of school were we? Aggies, yep. So we were known as the Aggies. We were also known as the Farmers, which is all fine. I just think that there were a lot of Aggies around, right, already. And so what basically happened is the student editor of the exponent and the student exponent editor. So what I like to remind people is they were like 20, 21 years old probably, right? Not very old. So this is what they did. Lester Cole was the editor and Fred Bullock was the sports editor, and they urged students to submit suggestions to replace Farmers and Aggies. Very few entries were submitted. So Cole and Bullock built a list of all the fighting animals they could think of that were not already used by another school in our region. The name Bobcats held their attention and became the choice. A front page editorial of the Exponent newspaper read, "The name Bobcats fits the bill in every respect. The ideal name should have a touch of the Western, a trace of the Aggie, and should be related to the mountains. Now analyze Bobcats. It fits, doesn't it? There's more fight and pep in a Bobcat than there is in all the rest of the animal kingdom. He is not large, but is highly respected by his enemies. As for being wild, there's nothing wilder than a Bobcat. His fighting tools consist of sharp claws and teeth. He does not depend on brute strength alone, but upon headwork and cunning. Bobcats are smart. Just try to softly warble that name, Bobcats. It can't be done. You have to spit it out. Oh. Right? So I love that two young men said, there's a lot of Aggies. We're not going to be the Aggies. We're going to change it. Literally, in 1916, that's what they did. So two students. Many of you I know have heard us and maybe have even used the term Golden Bobcats. Well, that actually is a term that's used for a specific team at Montana State. And that team was Bobcat men's basketball between 1927 and 1929. That just by way of their season, it was a little funky, but that team won the national championship. They were Virginia or Duke or Kansas or whatever. So on that team right here is Brick Breeden, right? Right there, Max Worthington. Do you know Max Worthington? The arena inside the fieldhouse, right? And these two right here, sometimes I don't know which is which, but one is Dobie Lambert and one is Schubert Dyke. So one, the practice fields over here, right between the fieldhouse and the stadium is named for one, and the intramural fields over here is named for the other. So there's some pretty impressive Bobcats on that team. So that team won the national championship. Basketball was played differently then. So you would score a basket, and then you would have a jump ball. You would score a basket and have a jump ball. We had a really tall, aside from Brick Breeden, who was tall, he had a really tall fellow there. So national champions. So that team became known as the Golden Bobcats, right? So the M on Mount Baldy, another great story literally about students. And I know because we live here, we don't think about it much. But any day, every day that an alumnus comes to the office who isn't from here, every time they say, oh, I look up at that M and I know immediately that I'm in Bozeman and at Montana State. It's something that's a vision for them, something that they associate with Montana State without a doubt. And so, you know, I try to look up there and remind myself of that every now and again. But the M, also a great story about students. So it was tradition up until really about the mid-70s that a class of students would leave a gift to the university or to the community. And so it was the class of 1918 in their sophomore year, 1915, so they're 19 or 20, that they said, we're going to leave this huge letter on a mountain, basically. And it was modeled after the U at the University of Utah. They did have their letter up already. But what they wanted it to be was, remember I told you that we were the school on the hill, right? And so they wanted it to be to look like a perfect M when you stood up on campus, when you were uphill. The M had to be designed a little differently, almost crooked, right? Because they wanted it to look like a perfect M from up here on campus. And how they designed that M on Mount Baldy was by flares and Morse code, basically, with using Montana Hall and basically like move right, move left, however, right? So mostly men who were in mechanic arts designed how the M should be laid out on Mount Baldy, and they set the corners basically of the letter and filled it in with rock, right? And so this class of 1918 in their sophomore year said, this is the gift we're gonna leave to the university and our community. And of course, they would not have known what they were doing. I mean, think about that M. Like it's on my name tag, it's on our letterhead, it's on my business cards, it's on every competitive surface we play on. What that M means to our community and to our university, they didn't know then, but I love that, right? And that they were 20 when they did it, or 19 even. But let me read, just again, their words are so good. On October 25th, 1915, President Hamilton declared the work day, and 60 college men headed for Mount Baldy by bicycle, buggy, and truck. Late in the afternoon, automobiles brought out the girls from the class, who had been laboring all morning with no less spirit than their classmates on the hill, to prepare the evening meal for the toilers. Domestic economy, right? The entire class gathered around a big bonfire in one of the picnic groves of Bridger Canyon. They feasted and frolicked several hours before returning to the city. So again, I love to give this presentation on campus and to you all, because I'm not sure what you think frolicking means in 1915. I'm pretty sure it means the same thing today. I'm pretty sure it does. So they feasted and frolicked and made that M. And then every year, right, they would take care of the M. There would be a big thing that would happen around that. We still do that. Unfortunately, for many, many years, we used lime because it was made the M really beautiful and white, but it almost killed Mount Baldy. And so once that was discovered, change of process, and the university and MSU facilities does a great job of making sure that M is taken care of, with some faculty involved as well to make sure we're not harming the ground right around it. So it's a great story about students. We have 103 years of fraternities and sororities at Montana State, which is, that's me right there, by the way, on the bottom pyramid. I was always a good bottom pyramid girl. It's kind of amazing, though, and I wanted to share that with you because we were an ag school, so to even have fraternities and sororities was kind of a big deal here. It was out of the box. And to have a system, a fraternity and sorority system that has gone over 100 years without ever closing is a big deal. There's lots of campuses who have shut down their Greek systems. Ours has not ever. We're the first two. AOPI was the first as a sorority, and Sigma Chi was the first as a fraternity. So we're already celebrating many of those centennials for many of those students. Spurs and fangs. I know many of you are going to remember the word spurs and fangs. So what spurs and fangs were a sophomore honorary women's group and a sophomore honorary men's group. So the women were the spurs and the men were the fangs. The spurs stood for service, patriotism, unity, respect, and service. And wait, did I say service twice? Anyway, the spurs were the women. I love that they're like in the shape of an M if you look at that. And so what would happen is freshmen would be tapped in their freshman year, at the end of their freshman year, so you would be in class or you would be at a meeting that somebody else knew, and literally somebody behind you would tap you, and it was a thing then, not just at Montana State, at other schools, and you would know then, I stand, and there's gonna be an announcement made, like I am being selected, and so the person who tapped me would say, Carrie Hansen has been selected to serve as a spur for next year, and so it was a big deal. It was celebrated academically, for sure, because you had to have a minimum GPA to be a spur or a fang. The fangs, it's not an acronym, it doesn't stand for anything, but they were really a service group on campus. So here's something really cool. So this right here is Torley Ostheim's fang. So most people would put it on their sweaters or whatever, their letter sweaters. So many of you knew Torley. He was the head of extension for, I don't know, years and years. He was a great friend of mine. And so Dorothy gave me his fang. So this is right there. These are spurs hats. So they would wear little tams, like a tam. There's another one over there. So, and the other thing that would happen is, they had an outfit, right? And so they would wear that outfit on a certain day of the week. And so you would see them on campus, like in their fang sweaters or their spur sweater. And you knew that those were the young people of campus who had been tapped as great service, you know, students. So, but that was a big deal. And they do not exist anymore. Septemberry is a group that does exist at Montana State. So Septemberry is an organization that, when started in 1920, recognized the top 7 male seniors So again, in their junior year, they would be tapped and be announced as a top seven senior, basically. And the Septemviri is Latin for seven men. And so that's how that group started. Today, Septemviri is co-ed. It's men and women. So the equivalent to Septemviri then started a little bit later, which was mortarboard. Of course, you couldn't have as many because this was a female group. So you had to have less than what you had for men. So there was only five women selected to go into mortarboard. You all know mortarboard is now a national thing, and it didn't start at Montana State, but Septemviri and mortarboard still exist today. They are co-ed now, but that's how long ago they started here. Les Bouffons. So Les Bouffons stands for the clowns, or Bouffons, right? But they were a long-running student organization that was made up of men who had to have a minimum GPA of 3.25 to be named a buff. That's what they called themselves. You can't see it in this picture, but they would have cummerbunds and sashes that have like a cursive B on it that stood for buffs. They were kind of the party planners of campus. But then there's a couple other things, and this is so funny right here. Some of you are going to remember this. One of the things that the buffs did was they printed these booklets every year. So here's the cursive B. And it says, right on the front, it says, College Men's Guide to Freshman Women. That's right. They called it the Hog Log. Not nice, but this was a produced publication. Look at this. This was real. So what it was a list and pictures of all of the freshman women and how to get a hold of them. So if they lived in Hannon, right? So the other funny part about this, so I'll pass these around so you can see, but I love some of the advertising. Pat and I were looking at it earlier. It says Parkway Grocery. That's Joe's Parkway, obviously. The Hofbrau. Let's see. We saw Pizza Oven. So Audrey's Pizza Oven. The Baxter Hotel. So some of the advertising. This is a university publication. College Men's Guide to Freshman Women. Is that hilarious? Yes. So the other funny thing about this, which I won't pass this around, but it's so funny. This guy is awesome. So he brings me these hog logs, and I know exactly what they are. And he's got a black scratch mark off, and I'm like, why did you scratch your name off there? And he said, because I checked off a lot of girls in that book. I didn't want people to know that I did that. So if you look in here, like there are check marks. There are like X's like, oh, I'm going to pursue that one, right? I mean, obviously that could not happen today, but it's a great story. And the buffs are who produced that. Of course, it was the buffs. Another great story is that there was a student strike in 1930. That involved mostly the women of campus. And basically what happened was curfew was changed from 11:30 to 10:30. That did not go over well at all. And so the women who could organize pretty quickly because of some of the sorority organization gathered together, got the other students around and said, we're gonna have a student strike because the curfew was changed without ever asking our opinion. So, let's rally. And they literally, so at that point, campus was big. So area-wise, Linfield Hall, Montana Hall, Roberts Hall. So literally across a diagonal, right? Herrick. So they circled those buildings. They got the rest of the student body, anyone they can, to circle the building and not let anyone into campus until their curfew was changed back. And they were angry about it. And President Atkinson at the time was actually in Washington, D.C. And so he did have to cut his trip very short because his campus was in uproar because of curfew. But it was these women students who said, it's not okay that you did it and didn't ask us. You need to change it back. And if you want to have a talk about it, then we can have a talk about it. But And at that point, like Hamilton Hall, that was their first, that was the first female residence hall on campus. And so they lived in Hamilton Hall with a house mother in Hamilton Hall. And it just wasn't okay that, that their curfew was cut short, right? Okay, so lots of, they win, they won. Yeah, they did win, heck yeah. So I put, I'll pass these around too. And I know lots of you are gonna remember this. Jim, there's one right by you. But this is the 1933 Montana, and so this is the yearbook. And basically, if some of you might remember, in the basement of Montana Hall, when there were those like shingles down there, it was really weird, but they would they had all the pictures of this yearbook down in Montana Hall. Like I can remember it, my freshman, sophomore year of college probably, so until the early 90s. But I did bring a couple up here and there while they are prized possession. I brought the ones that are in less great shape. But so what happened was, there was this is 1933, Montana, and the editor was named Dave Ravines, and he was from Miles City. And he had a photographer that he worked with, a Schlechten, which was a famous, it came to be known as a well-known photographer in Bozeman. And a couple of accomplices. And basically what he did was he created two yearbooks as the yearbook editor. So again, you know, he's 21, maybe 22. So what he did was he created the actual yearbook, right? A record of the year's events, the sporting events, etc. And then he created this one, which was called a spoof yearbook. And it was basically that he dressed up as this character. He like glued beard on his face. He called himself Clarence Mjork. And he is, I put a sticky note on the page, but this talks about the 8 Clarence Mjorks that came to Montana State College who didn't know each other till they got here, but they were all from Endgate, Montana, right? And so Clarence Mjork is on almost every page of this yearbook. And when you think about it, like we're in such a digital age now, but he cut and pasted himself into almost everything. So he is the director of the marching band. He's on the livestock judging team. He's in the Future Homemakers of America, which he wouldn't have been allowed to be in. And there are positions that he's in, like lying across women's laps, which you could not do. There's also a couple photos of women in their health classes, which would look basically like a swimsuit bottom today. But in the 30s, you didn't show women's legs. That you did not do that. And so he was in, so what he did, he created the two yearbooks, which is a lot of work in itself, and then he creates this crazy one. And he takes the other one to the administration. You had to get it approved. Okay, go, you're good, send it to print. So in those days, you would get your yearbook in the fall from, because it went all the way through the year. And so what he did was he sent this one to print instead of the normal one. And so seniors who had graduated already were like, what in the world is this? This is crazy. So like the picture of the basketball team is a lineup of Butterfinger candy bars. There's a picture of fraternity guys that are all like oil cans because they would like slick their hair back, right? And there's actual names associated with the oil cans, but it's a work of art. We have several here in the building, but I just thought I'd highlight a couple things and you can look through it and you can see that he's crazy. Another thing that's in there that you may see, and she's one of my favorite parts of that yearbook. So there's also a story that goes through the yearbook that he changes the story up, and he writes prolifically through the yearbook about the Clarence Mjorks that meet from Endgate, right? And but there's also this woman that sometimes shows up in the pictures, and her name is Betty Mjork, but she kind of looks like a blow-up doll, but she's wood. So sometimes in a group picture, you'll see Betty Mjork like behind the group or whatever. You don't see her often, but when you do, it's like, oh, there's Betty Mjork. I love it. It became known, honestly, as the greatest prank, college prank of the 1930s. And He was suspended from Montana State. He was in big trouble, for sure. He did end up coming back and finishing at Montana State. And I do remember, not when I started working here, but when I was a student and had an internship at the alumni office, that we got a check from Clarence Meork in Miles City. And Ruth Austin at the time was like, well, that's funny. Like, we know the story. And then she called the Miles City Bank and they said, any check from Clarence Meork is a good one. We said, okay, we're gonna cash it, man. That's what we're doing. It's a great story, but a work of art, truly. Another kind of just a story about being a land grant institution and what we do. Because we were created to serve the people of Montana, then that is what we do. And so for a couple of weeks, in 1942, Montana State College closed and students were sent up to the High Line to harvest the sugar beets so that we could send sugar to those men and women who are serving our country. And so literally there are several pictures of it. They would meet by the flagpole, any student that was available. Women were included, invited, but it was mostly men, and they would divide into who was going to what town, what county, how were they going to be, you know, they would stay with host families, et cetera. And so the sugar beets was a big deal. One of the things that we needed to do as a land grant institution and would do. There was a panty raid on campus. So Hannon was built in 1955, but in 1957, there was a big panty raid. I'm gonna read about it because it's great. On March 1st, 1957, notes from the student columnist in the Exponent read, "We'll choose a dark night sometime next quarter, and if all goes well, the most stupendous feat of unlawful devilment ever to take place on this campus will come about. We will have a panty raid." And that, so they said next quarter, right? So then a week later, the reality of the prank was reported by the Bozeman Daily Chronicle. A crowd estimated at 1,000 college boys. 1,000. That is so many at that time. 1,000 college boys descended upon Hannon Hall. Police officers resorted to anti-riot techniques, including tear gas, to try to break up the mob. It took more than 2 hours to quell the milling throng. Rocks, ice, and beer cans were thrown at officers and through the windows of Hannon. And then the participant said, quote, "We needed something like that on campus to stir things up a little. It was getting dull. We had a lack of spirit. We just had a few assemblies. We needed a little excitement." So they had a panty raid. You can imagine in the world of alumni, I've met several people who lived in Hannon when that panty raid happened, and they kind of would tell you that they had fun, right? They kind of liked it. The Christmas sing was also a popular thing. So what would happen is the student organizations on campus would all prepare a song, and they would get together in like grand holiday assembly, and each group would sing Christmas songs. So this is hard to see, but it basically lists like the songs that each group was going to sing. So like the Independents were singing Joyous Christmas, and one of the fraternities was singing White Christmas, and then the men's co-op was singing O Little Town of Bethlehem. So it was like, who's singing what? And everybody would go to the sub, and it was a thing. So the Christmas sing was obviously also very difficult to do today, because you don't know what, you know, you can't force people to believe one thing or another. But that was tradition for a long, long time, through the 70s, actually. The Field House, obviously another great icon of Bozeman, when it was being built, and even shortly thereafter, it was referred to as Raleigh's Folly. So Roland Rennie was the president of Montana State at the time, and people were convinced it would not stand. It's a wooden dome structure, the largest in the world at the time. They said it would not stand. And so they called it Raleigh's Folly. That was the nickname when it was being built. It was finished in 1957. But one of the things about the Field House too that I also, especially when I talk to students, and some of you I bet are gonna know about this, but once the Field House was built, so between the Field House and the Bobcat Stadium now, it wasn't there then, But so the parking lot, basically like right over here. So it was widely known on campus that people would use the term or the phrase, do you want to go watch the field house rotate? So obviously there would be hundreds of steamy cars with people making out in their cars in the gravel parking lot, yes. And so I love to tell students when I give them, I say, how many of you have grandparents who went to Montana State? Okay, and then I say, ask them if they've ever seen the field house rotate. And I just say, if you could record it, it would be so good. Because I'm sure they would be like, how do you know about that? You know, so, but Raleigh's Folly is doing pretty good, I'd say, right? Some more stories about traditions we're going to get into. So freshmen, obviously, you know, not just at Montana State, but at any campus, really, in those days, hazing was normal. It was okay. That's just what it was, the rite of passage to college, right? And so Montana State was not different than other schools. And so there would be public humiliation, but there were some traditions that stood true. So one, this one right here, because this is a very old picture. There would always be a tug of war between the freshmen and sophomore men of Montana State. It was the freshman men had to allow the sophomore men to always win. They had to. It was just part of what you did. And it was a thing that all students came to. So this is a little harder to see, but around the edge of the pond here, those are ladies standing in their white dresses in the mud, because it's just what you went to see. It was a spectacle. It was an event that happened on campus. So where that, so the first, it was called the Frog Pond, and it was right, to the north of the SOB barn. So that is the original 1926 beef barn on our campus. This is the original Frog Pond. Again, lots of debauchery happened around the Frog Pond, and so it was filled. Another pond moved up to the middle of campus, which you think, why would it go to the middle of campus? But I guess they thought they could keep a watch on it. So it was between Hamilton Hall and Montana Hall. That did not last very long. And then there was a break, but then where the current duck pond is now, that's where, so Montana State's always also had kind of a pond of sorts, right? So the tug of war would be a thing. These beanies right here were definitely a thing. And what would happen is when you came to classes, and beanies went until the early 80s, so you would basically come to MSU to sign up for classes, and you came right before classes started, and so everybody would come in August. It'd be different than what it is today with orientation throughout the summer. You would just come once, and you would come, and you would go through the line. You know, you would sign up for this class, and sign up for this class, right? You guys remember? And then at the end of the line, you would pay your bill, basically, and then at the end of the line, mostly women who worked in the registrar's office, so official people at Montana State would hand you your beanie, like, you must wear this. And you had to wear it your whole first week of your freshman year. And there were men's and women's beanies. The women's were called TAMs, again, but they looked very similar. They would be green, and they would have your class year on the front of them. That's probably one of the reasons why they stopped, I'm guessing. We didn't really know when you were going to graduate. So the class year would be on the front, and again, it identified you as a freshman. I'm sure it was supposed to be so that people could help you, but it wasn't about that at all. It was about hazing. And so if you were caught without your beanie, you would get put into stocks that were outside the front of the sub until somebody brought your beanie to you. This guy's wearing his beanie now, but he obviously didn't have it, so he was getting paddled on the front door of the sub, the front porch. You can see, this is one of my favorite pictures, because look at those door handles. They're exactly the same today. That pull, oh, I love that. So you would be publicly humiliated, and you would have to wear your beanie the whole first week. And there would be buttons that would say freshman week or whatever. There's a couple beanies over there as well. So again, something that somebody from Montana State, an official, basically handed the student and said, you must wear this, right? And so beanies were a thing until the early 80s. And the black books, all of that stuff, probably right along the lines of things we couldn't do today, right? the Hello Walk. Some of you might even remember the Hello Walk. So it changed paths several times, but essentially it was from that front porch of Montana Hall down to Culbertson is what I would say today, or like it was called Lewis and Clark Hall at one point as well. So it was in front of Montana Hall. If you were ever on that pathway, you would make eye contact, whether you were a student, faculty, staff, alumni. If you knew you were on the Hello Walk, you made eye contact and you said hello to one another. And I challenge everyone that I give this presentation to, if you are on use the Centennial Mall, make eye contact with somebody and say hello. You might change somebody's day. And that's a different thing today than it was 40 years ago or 50, right? So the Hello Walk was definitely a thing. Hello would be painted in all different languages right out front of the sub. So try to keep our campus friendly and make eye contact with one another. Women's Day turned into Day of Student Recognition. So Women's Day was a recognition for the women leaders of campus, and they would wear white all that day. There would be a baton ribbon twirling thing that the juniors would seniors would pass to the juniors who would be seniors next year. And those leaders were recognized. There was always one outstanding senior female who was named the five-year speaker, and she was asked to return in 5 years to talk to the then women, to talk about the real world or how she's keeping her home, whatever, you know, was her topic. But it was an important thing to be named a five-year speaker, right, Caroline? But obviously things change. You can't just recognize women. And so it changed to Day of Student Recognition. Athletics always been a big thing for Montana State, no question, but I bet there's some things in here that you may not have known. We had a synchronized swimming team. They were called the Dolphins. I don't know why they weren't called the Bobcats, but they were called the Dolphins. We had wrestling at one point. They're all dressed up, but we did have a shooting team. At one point, we've always had rodeo, you know, skiing. Here was our gymnastics. So not just the sports we know today, but lots of different sports. Some of you probably already know this story that it's been written about, quite widely. Montana State was the only school to lose all 11 starters of our football team to World War II. And many of those stories are called the ultimate sacrifice. And they also are referred to as the Golden Ghosts. So I think there's a book called both the Golden Ghosts and the Ultimate Sacrifice. So we lost 14 total Bobcat football players during World War II, which was more than any other school in the country. And 11 of them happened to be starters. So it was a big deal for us. Homecoming, something that happens every fall, so you all know that, one of the greatest traditions on a college campus. Some of you may not know about this, but it's so fun if you ever hear about it. It's called the Undie Run, and it's students who, now over at Waite Gate, which is between Roberts Hall and Hannon, that's the start, and they basically like strip down, and then those clothes basically get donated to the Goodwill or Salvation Army or whoever, and that's part of the run, and then they run in the freezing cold, in literally, they're scantily clad here, but it's funny, but it only takes like 5 minutes maybe, because they run down around the spirit statue, and then they run back, and that's it, but it's really funny. If you ever hear about it, you should come up and check it out. Obviously, we've had a longstanding rivalry with the Grizzlies of long ago, Montana State University, but now the University of Montana. And probably there's so many great stories and traditions. If I personally could bring one back, it would be this one. And so obviously we still hold the tradition of playing the University of Montana and lots of things in our competitive sports. And we've always been in the same conference. So we're in the top five oldest rivalries in the country because we've always been in the same conference. So what do you know Bobcat Grizzly competition to be known as today? Brawl of the Wild, which I don't know, because this is what it used to be called, the Copper Bowl, which is so cool. So what would happen is for 25 years, 1926 to 1951, the Bobcat and Grizzly football teams would meet in Butte and play the in Butte. So basically, I'm sure it was like, well, we are not going to trash Missoula. Well, we're certainly not going to trash Bozeman. Let's meet in Butte. Woohoo! Let's party in Butte, right? And so I think it was a big deal for the state of Montana, for sure. I'm going to read a little bit about this, too, because it's so good. This is from the first year. This year inaugurates the playing of the Bobcat Grizzly football game in Butte. The annual game was played before a monster crowd, which packed Butte's Clark Park. A large crowd of Bobcat fans, including almost the entire student body, went over in a special train and had a happy time. There's no doubt that the game being played in Butte is a fine venture from the standpoint of both schools. And fast forward about 20 years, the big day of the sports year, both schools decamped to Butte, where they spent a happy day, making snide remarks about each other's schools, imbibing in cheer up. Really? And attending the game, at least most attended the game. The head stomping grounds was the Finland Hotel, where the lobby was crowded to bursting with jovial fans displaying pom-poms, chrysanthemums, and here and there a black eye. So for 25 years, the football game was played in Butte. And I just think that that would be really, really fun to recreate that, if I could. And I love the name, the Copper Bowl, right? Makes sense. So obviously things start to change, right, for Montana State. So certainly not as many stories to share necessarily around the 60s and 70s, other than that students still stood up for the things that they believed and believed in and wanted to wanted to stand up for. So the SOB barn is a great example of that. That 1926 beef barn was going to be torn down, and it was the students who said no. We're gonna stand around it just like those women in the 1930s. So these students rallied, held hands around the SOB barn and said, you're not tearing it down, Montana State, we're gonna save it. And that's how it became the SOB barn, right? Save our barn. I know it's SOB barn, but. So that's how it changed. So things started to change. You know, it was common that men started having a little longer hair on campus, and that was not a thing. That was not allowed prior to that. You had a very short hair if you were a college male, but there were opportunities to really get involved and show your spirit, I think. We wouldn't have the SOB barn today if those students hadn't saved it. But things do start to change. Commencement and reunions, you've all participated in that. That's something that we do here. With commencement, we're getting ready to welcome the class of 1970, 1960, and 1950 to celebrate their 50, 60, and 70 years since graduation. And so that will be in May. And I've had the great honor to meet two people who actually graduated 80 years ago. One of them is still living in Billings, a retired, he's probably been longer retired than he's been working. He's 106, so yeah, he graduated from Montana State in 1934. Just amazing. And he loves this place as much as I love it, or you love it. His experience just happened at a different time, you know? But man, does he love this place a lot. So I feel really grateful that I've had the opportunity to meet two people who graduated 80 years ago. Here's our fight song. I'm not going to sing it for you. But I also think it's important to reflect on the traditions that students are going to be talking about in 20 years. They're different than what you experience or I experience. You know, Catapalooza wasn't a thing, or the M. I love that tradition that Montana State's created, that all freshmen make an M on the football field, right? And that they're in that picture. Move-in Day, which I was grateful to be part of the team that created Move-in Day. But those are the things that students are going to be talking about, the impact and how helpful and how inclusive Montana State was, and how to make them feel like this was their home. Bobcat Fest, which happens on the last day of classes, is a tradition. The MSU Powwow, Awards for Excellence, the Community Catwalk, where President Cruzado takes the band downtown into the mall and plays and everything. Spirit, the Alumni Plaza, you know, we see people taking their pictures there all the time. Gold Rush at the football game, the first football game of the season. That wasn't a thing when I was in school either, but I think it's a great tradition that Montana State has created. So students are going to be talking about different things, obviously, and that's okay. You know, times must evolve, for sure. And I would just finish by saying, hail Montana State, stay true, blue and gold. I love telling these stories because so many of them, most of them, are about students who shaped who we became and who made the experience what it was. But those students were taught by and guided by faculty and staff, just like you. And so the students that you taught and advised and interacted with are going to continue to be talking about you for years to come as well. And so this place is just going to keep building on that strong foundation, right? But wow, I mean, this could be a 6-hour workshop. Like, it's so fun. There are so many stories I didn't tell you. But I hope, and I'm sure that each of you, I hope, learned something new today that you didn't know about Montana State. Again, I love spreading the story and to be the torchbearer to carry these stories on, because who's going to tell them? I'm going to tell them. I'm going to keep telling them to people, because this is how Montana State was built and what a great history we have as a community, as faculty and staff, as students. We all came together and made this place so great, and it just keeps getting better, right?